Hi, I'm W2P Entertainment Editor Jason Fraley, and we are here with
Evan Casey
and
Rachel Zampelli,
who star in Into the Woods, now at Ford's Theater, now through May 22nd. Thanks so much for coming in, first of all, guys.
My pleasure. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us.
I hear there are giants in the sky. That's going to be stuck in your head as you leave the theater. We all remember, obviously, the 2014 movie version, but it started as a Broadway musical back in 87. I think it had to compete against Phantom of the Opera, but it still took home a couple Tonys, tons of nominations. In case any of our listeners missed the show or the movie, remind them the general premise of this fractured fairy tale idea.
Well, basically, it's an interweaving of many different fairy tale stories that we all know from our youth. Little Red Riding Hood, Jack and the Beanstalk, Cinderella, and then Sondheim and the Pine sort of created their own fairy tale of a baker and his wife trying to get a child that sort of connects all of those stories together.
And they have to reverse a family curse involving the child.
Exactly correct, yes.
All right, cool. I mean, it really is a genius premise. Talk about, I want to go into your guys' characters for a second, but just sticking with that whole fractured fairy tale idea of why that's such a joy for, you know, families to come or anyone that, or even adults that grew up on those tales to see them sort of, you know, rejiggered in a new way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can make sort of inside jokes to all of America because we all know the stories.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the characters sort of start acting just like us,
right,
we get it.
Yeah. There's a lot of familiarity that people already have going in, which obviously lends the musical an immediate way of accessibility for audiences. But then the way Sondheim and Lapine weave them together and layer on their own elements to them, and then, of course, as they continue in Act Two to sort of go beyond what happens happily ever after, it puts a whole new spin on everything, which is part of the delight.
Now, was Into the Woods the first thing to actually do this? Because after that, we started seeing, you know, Wicked and Shrek and, you know, the true story of the Big Bad Wolf storybook. Stuff like that started happening, but this might have been the first.
I mean, I think it was the first of this particular. It must have been because when people, you can even watch the, what was it, PBS, whatever the.
Yes, the PBS performance.
The PBS performance you can watch that I watched over and over and over again. And I mean, the audience is losing their mind because it had never been done before.
Mm-hmm.
Not
yeah, because
like
we're late 80s here. Yeah, so this is like, you know, decades before Wicked and stuff. So
right.
This,
sure.
Yeah. So yeah, way ahead of its time. Tell me about your guys' characters. You get to play the witch, right?
I
mean,
you know,
Meryl Streep's down here and you're way up here, but you know. Tell me what's going on with the witch here.
Yeah, it's funny. People are like asking me, "Oh, you get to play the Meryl Streep role." And I'm like, "No, I'm playing the Bernadette Peters role."
Exactly.
However, but if you want to compare me to Meryl Streep, that is fine with me.
You'll take it.
I'll take it.
What is her objective in this
one of
story?
Our Academy Awards.
Her objective is to become young and beautiful again. That's literally what it is. She's been cursed. She's old and ugly. She finds a way, finally figures out a way to make that happen. She can't do it herself. She needs other people, and she enlists the baker and his wife because they need something very badly, and she needs something very badly, and if they succeed, everybody wins.
And speak to your side, Evan, because you play the baker, right?
I do play the baker.
So where you and your wife are sort of in the beginning, dire straits, unable to have a kid. Right?
Yeah, desperate to have a family. That's part of what's so great about the show is immediately it's laid out quite clearly what everyone wants. So everyone's objective is quite clear. Cinderella wants to go to the ball. And the baker and his wife desperately want a child. The witch wants this curse reversed for her own needs and ends. So right off the bat, it's all laid out immediately for the audience, what everybody wants, what everyone's going to be searching for, which is part of what makes the story so great.
That's awesome. Now, we've gotten so far and we're bearing the lead. It's a friggin' musical and a legendary one. Tony winning, Stephen Sondheim. Remind us some of the, I sang Giants in the Sky earlier, but remind us some of the great, great memorable tunes here.
Well, certainly Children Will Listen, mm-hmm, which is the finale, and The Witch actually begins that song. Children Will Listen is...
Mm-hmm. Giants in the Sky, No One is Alone is another ballad. I Know Things Now, which is the song that Little Red sings, which is a great up-tempo song.
Oh, I mean... The Witch's Rap is pretty...
The Witch's Rap is very fun. It's one of the at least certainly one of the first times that Sondheim implemented a kind of rap-esque number, a rapid patter with very little musical accompaniment to it.
Can we get a little of it now? Or are you not in character?
Sure, no, right. Yeah. Which part should I do, the beginning or the...
No, just a little, beginning's always nice.
Greens, greens, and nothing but greens. Parsley, peppers, cabbages, and celery, asparagus, and watercress, and fiddle ferns, and lettuce. He said, all right. But it wasn't quite, because I caught him in the autumn in my garden one night.
Whoa, very witchy. Witchy woman. Witchy. What else? There was It Takes Two, mm-hmm. Moments in the Woods, on the steps of the palace. Yep. It goes on and on. What are you thinking about? I mean, we just heard the rapping there, introducing there, but what? How do you, I don't know, where would you rank this in Sondheim's career? What makes it different from his, or you know,
Well, canon? I certainly think it's one of the most accessible shows that Sondheim has written. I mean, for a lot of people who have musical theater backgrounds like we do, we adore Sondheim and love everything that he does, but some of his works over the years have been criticized, rightly or wrongly, for not always being quite as accessible to the typical theater goer. And so I think this one, again, because of the story that they're pulling from, and also just because of the joy within the score, I think it's immediately accessible to audiences, which is great, and it's probably the most family-friendly of his shows, so to speak. So that's also a great thing. For me, you know, it's hard to rank Sondheim shows again because Sondheim is in a class unto himself for me, but it's certainly one of the most enjoyable times I've ever had on stage, both just because of the joy of the first act, which is very farce-like, and because of the emotional depth of the second act, which really takes it to a meaningful place.
And maybe that, you know, that it's a good introductory one for maybe families,
sure,
or a kid
absolutely
might see this as their first Sondheim production, and then they go on to discover all of his other stuff.
Yeah, I feel like it's you know, Midsummer for Shakespeare is, this is, you know what I mean?
Like, sure,
yes,
yeah.
This is the equivalent.
Yeah.
It is accessible because it involves people we already know and concepts mm-hmm. we already know, and then, of course, takes them and turns them completely on their head and smashes them literally with a giant foot.
Nice. Talk about, that's the music, but let's talk about what we see. I mean, mm-hmm. how do we bring this to life, not only with the costumes, but with the stage and the set, and, you know, we have beanstalks and tons of stuff to work with. So, you know, what are we actually seeing?
We have some pretty cool projection elements in ours, which Peter Flynn decided he wanted to incorporate.
Peter Flynn, the director.
Peter Flynn, the director.
He did Ragtime, 1776, yeah. A bunch of stuff afterwards, yeah.
Cinderella's mother is a tree, and he uses a projection that is one of the most magical things I've ever seen in a show that I've been a part of. And it's simple. The magic is very simple. There's projections, and then there's things that humans do. So mm-hmm. it's really cool how we create a world where giants exist and trees sing and witches have powers. Mm-hmm. But it's very effective.
Did you mm-hmm. just say Cinderella's mom is a tree?
She's a tree. Yes.
Bippity boppity bloom.
Yeah. She appears in a tree.
She wasn't always a tree. She okay. became a tree after she died, and then Cinderella, she planted a branch at the grave of her mother, and then she cried so much that it turned into a handsome tree.
Right.
I got it.
And so her, you know, she
this
talks,
isn't a spoiler. We learned this from the first
yeah,
10
no,
minutes.
It's fine. Yeah, it's fine.
Oh, damn, we ruined it. Now she's going to become a tree. No, it's kind of there from the outset. Okay.
Right.
Cool. How about costumes? What do we...
Our costume designer, Wade LeBoissonniere, did a really great job. Both in terms of keeping it in the world of fairy tale, but taking some of his own, pushing some of his own extremes with some of the characters, which would require it, which is great. Things like the step family, the stepsisters and stepmother, going with outlandish colors and size and scope and shape. But also diversifying class well between people who have a more labor-intensive life, like the baker and his wife and Jack and his mother, versus the upper class of the princes. And you'll see lots of colors, lots of things that evoke that immediate sort of jumping out of the picture book kind of feel.
Awesome.
My costumes are pretty awesome. I have go completely from old, haggard, ugly to young, beautiful, hot. And it happens in a few seconds,
mm-hmm.
seemingly. We have ways of doing things, but the transformation is pretty incredible. It's people ask me more about the transformation than any other thing after the play. So it's Pretty cool.
Dish on your co-stars a little bit. You know, who plays your wife? Who's Cinderella? You know,
they're all the worst.
That's why we got you two, exactly. The best in here.
No. It's a fantastic, really fantastic group made up, and I'm very proud to say, we're both proud to say, made up of entirely DC artists, which is something that we are very proud of. I know that Ford's is proud of to be able to show off the talent that we have here in this city, which is fantastic. But a lot of wonderful people that I've worked with before, which is great, and it's also great to see them step up into new roles. Chris Mueller, who plays one of the princes I've worked with many times, but he's showing off a new side of himself in this role, which is great. Awa Salseca, who plays my wife, is phenomenal in this role. She sounds glorious and is bringing a groundedness and a beauty to the character that hasn't been seen often in that role, I think. And Rachel and I go way, way back, and
way back.
Any opportunity to perform with her is a true joy for me. So you may speak now about other co-stars. That was my segue into you.
Of course. Evan is my rock.
You didn't have to start with me, but that's fine.
He is. It is a joy. We laugh so much. We make each other laugh sometimes while I'm hiding behind trees on stage and things like that. Little secret.
All professionally.
It is professional. It's in character.
Correct.
It is always in character.
Yes.
Jade Jones.
Jade is fantastic as
plays
Little Red.
Little Red. She's a big fan favorite.
Mm-hmm.
She's ridiculous in all the right ways.
Sometimes... Forgotten in the general idea of the show, but very much a fan favorite and very much a highlight in this particular show is Tiziano D'Affuso, who plays Milky White the cow.
Oh, that's right, Milky White.
And
is a
everyone
person.
Is like, "Who played the cow?" And I'm like,
right,
"I was the
you're
baker."
Dragging the cow around. Yeah.
Yeah. No, oh, but that yes. cow though, and you're like, "Did you see how many songs
what about that song
I sang?"
They're like, "Yes, but the
like,
cow."
But the cow. But
was
truly,
utterly amazing.
She
is,
utterly.
Oh, there we go.
That's good.
There's a reason you have this job. No, he.
Not
but
for
he
long
is,
if I keep
he
making jokes like that.
That's right. He is fantastic and a scene stealer in all the right ways in this show.
Awesome. Tell me, remind. I know you both have been in here before for Crucible and other shows, but remind our listeners a little about yourself. Where'd you grow up? How'd you get the acting bug?
I grew up in Bowie, Maryland. Bowie. I started doing theater when I was in the fifth grade. And did community theater, school productions, never anything professional until after college. I did, I got my degree in theater and then started working professionally out of college. And that was 85 years ago.
Wow. You use the witch spell to keep it
going.
Right,
exactly.
Yeah.
I grew up in Ellicott City, Maryland. Go Orioles.
Go
Ravens. And I went to school. I probably started getting involved in acting when I was maybe a sophomore in high school. I sort of wandered into Centennial High School's drama department, and then I was like, oh, I'm kind of good at this, and I kind of like this. And the teacher was like, you're kind of good at this. And I was like, oh, maybe I'll keep doing this. But I went to Catholic University and got my degree in theater and started working professionally here in D.C. And many, many moons ago and haven't stopped since. One little fun side note is Scott Cedar, who plays my father and the narrator in this show, was also my first professional show at Olney, Maryland, or Olney Theater in Maryland in 2001, back in the day.
What was that show?
Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Were you Conrad? Or who?
I was not. I was just random ensemble member number two. But
okay.
From there, look at the heights I have climbed.
A fun fact, my first professional show was Into the Woods.
Really? Oh, was it really?
It was. Did you not know that?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Where was this? Was this the one in fifth grade?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
You mean first professional show?
No, yeah, professional show. It was at New Rep, which is outside of Boston.
Okay.
And I played Florinda, and I understudied the witch and the baker's wife, and I actually went on for the witch, and I was like 23 or something like that.
Wow. So it's a little bit of coming full circle for both of you guys,
exactly.
For both those reasons you
it
just said.
It is. It's very cool. For me, you're interviewed and people ask you all the time, well, what roles do you really want to play? What's your like bucket list kind of roles? I really don't have those. I'll read a script or see something or hear something and be like, ooh, yeah, I want to do that. I can get very excited about it, but I don't have, like, I'm going to die if I don't play.
There's no checklist. Yeah.
No, no, except for The Witch. My uncle gave me the CD for Christmas when I was 11 years old, and I, like, disappeared into my grandparents' the bedroom where I stayed in Boston when we visited, and I came out, what, 2 and some hours later, you know, mm-hmm. reading through the libretto with my Walkman Discman on, and I came out of there, and I was like...
Did it have the shock protection? Like, did it skip the skip? You know, remember those things?
Yes, absolutely it did.
Okay, good. Because yes. when you're riding in the back of the minivan, that gets it.
But I do think that there is something. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, anyway, so I literally came out of the bedroom and I was like, I'm going to play The Witch one day. And so this is like your inner child's biggest.
But I do think that there is something special about this particular show, particularly for people who grew up of our generation, because when we were introduced to it, we were of that sort of molding age where we're sort of where we discovered it at the right time that it was different from other shows we experienced because of the way in which it incorporated those fairy tales, the cleverness of it, the inventiveness of it, that it was just sort of so amazing in a new way. And quite frankly, I mean, I can see that again now. My son, who is 5 years old, has come to see the show, both acts, all the way through, and has wanted to see it. Would have seen it many more times were it not for his own schedule.
Yeah.
but he's amazed by it.
How old is he? He's five?
He's five, yeah. So there's a special, I mean, literally a magical quality, both in terms of what's created theatrically, but also just in terms of, again, the innovation of lyrics and music and how the stories interweave that I think really engages the young mind.
That's awesome that you're, and good on you now, you know, now you get to do it again and see it through a father's eyes.
Exactly.
Of your,
mm-hmm.
you know, when, yeah. whereas we were all kids when it came out. So
right.
That's awesome. Talk about getting to, just in closing here, getting to just do it at Ford's. I know Into the Woods came through, I think, a year or two ago at Kennedy Center, which is mm-hmm. cool in its own right. It's, you know, fancy and big and open. But talk about getting to do it in the intimacy of Ford's. I mean, even if you have seen Into the Woods at other places, come see it here for the historic nature of Ford's.
I think it's kind of a dream because it is intimate enough to where the audience can see your eyes
mm-hmm.
And can hear your breath and you can feel them. And for this production, the audience, I mean, the audience always matters, but they're so important. I address the audience directly the entire time, but I know even for people who don't directly address them, it is really cool to be, not only is Ford's a beautiful theater to just be performing in with the orchestra and Sondheim's music, but the intimacy is, I think, makes it.
Well, there's a connection. There's a connection to
with,
the audience when a place has that level of intimacy that allows for, you know, in any musical, in any theatrical production, the audience is very much a character and part of the story. But in this one in particular, where sort of things are being, there's constant engagement, as Rachel said, with the audience, both from her character, and there's a constant expectation of the audience following with you where you go through these stories that they're familiar with, but you're going to take them in new directions. Being able to do it in a space where you can actually see their faces, where they can actually see your face, where you performing to the back of the audience doesn't mean having to perform to a space that's like 400 feet away. It's still, you feel like very much like you are part of this narrative together as opposed to sort of two separate entities, which is really important.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Anything
else
we
want to add at the end? Why should our listeners come out? Why should they not miss it? Because I think we're entering the final, you know, stretch here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, one, to see Rachel perform The Witch. She is phenomenal. That's absolutely true, as well as the other actors that we've named. But you should come because regardless of age, it's truly a show that can be appreciated by all levels, as we've already said, from age 5 on up. But also, the reason why this show is so wonderful is that it brings with it the great, tremendous, side-splitting joy of a farce and a high comedy with the great emotional depth of you know, a truly dramatic tale. By the time you get to the end, you see and experience deeper truths because of what Sondheim and Lapine are able to enlighten through the course of the show.
And you should come see Evan do No More. It really is. I'm not saying that because he just said it's the best No More I've ever seen.
Really?
It is.
That's high praise.
It is. It's just true.
All right. Well.
Well, thank you, Rachel.
You're welcome.
We'll leave that
now
as
I'm blushing on live radio.
We'll leave that as the last word. Again, everybody, it's Into the Woods, the musical, at Ford's Theater now through May 22nd. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us,
Jason. Thank you.